2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
The Point is a new development that's coming to the old prison site in Draper. Plans were released just a couple hours ago, and they show everything from bike trails to concert venues to jobs will be just a 15-minute walk away. But what's the next step in the process? The Point Executive Director Alan Matheson joins us now to break it all down. Alan, thanks for jumping on with us today.
Happy to be here, Boyd. Thanks.
Well, wonderful. So we have some visuals now. We have a little framework in terms of what is happening here. Give us an update. Where are we in this project?
Well, this is kind of an exciting day, a key milestone in our efforts to develop this point. And we've released the framework master plan for the site. Call it a framework plan because it does outline clear direction for us going forward and helps us reflect what we've heard from the public, but it's flexible. And we know that there will be changes and improvements over time. But over the last 7 months or so, we've listened to over 10,000 Utahns who clearly have a stake in this site. We've had expert analysis looking at the economics and the market. And we've had creative planners working together to try to develop a vision that reflects what we've heard from the public, what we've heard from the legislature, and that ultimately I think will create a place that we can all be proud of.
Yeah. So often on these big kinds of projects like this, sometimes you end up with a really big vision that's impossible to execute. Sometimes you end up with really small thinking that just has to be redone over and over and is very expensive. Occasionally, you know, you'll get a few of those pieces in the right place. One of the things that I've been most impressed about with The Point is you really had a set of governing principles in terms of what it is you're trying to do as you develop this site. Can you walk us through some of those in terms of transportation and open space, sustainability? To me, it seems like you've really planted some flags on some principles to guide, as you said, what is a flexible framework.
Absolutely. And really the guiding principle has been that this is not just about roads and buildings and, you know, the typical community development elements, but it's about people. We've been driven by this goal of improving life for the people in the state. And so we've got a number of key vision elements that have come from our working group members and members of the public. One is a sense of community, a place where people can gather and enjoy being together, concerts, the parks, trails, open space. One is sustainability. We want this to be a place that's a model of sustainability, that uses less water, that contributes less to air pollution, that really uses less energy, et cetera. Transportation is a big thing. And so we've created at this site what we're calling a one-car community, where the car is not king. It's a place where people can access the site through top-notch transit, where they can get around the site through circulators. There will be some on-demand transportation systems. So easy to get around the site without a vehicle.
Yeah.
And then there are other things, looking at smart cities, looking at economic development and innovation, a place where we generate new ideas and new companies that help solve problems in our area and create jobs that are incomparable around the world.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we are really pleased to have on with us the executive director, Alan Matheson, of The Point, the project, of course, being developed at the old Draper prison site. And Alan, you just mentioned this, you know, the focus on bike and walking and all that is part of the plan. And I know other cities have attempted different variations of this to reduce cars. And are we seeing that really play out, or are we just too addicted to having the freedom to just jump in the car and go a different direction? How's that challenge going to be addressed in this site?
You know, we love our cars and understand that people want them and they bring convenience. But we're building this site not just for today, but for the future. And we see certain trends that there's less interest in reliance on single vehicles. They're just becoming more expensive, and there are other more convenient options. So as we think ahead, we are trying to build a community that people can get around easily. We've created these little green pathways throughout the site that allow people to access any point on the site by walking or riding a bike without getting on a road. So we think it'll be a pleasant way to get around. We think we provide a range of options and, of course, let people make the choices that make sense for them. But the more convenient we make the alternatives, the more cost competitive we make the alternatives, the more they'll be used, and that creates other benefits for us.
I wanted to ask you, we know there's housing pressures in the state of Utah as housing prices continue to go up. As you look at the development of the site, is there a balance point there? Will people of lower income be able to afford a place at The Point? What's the use and the mix as it relates to the housing component?
It really is a big issue, and I think we're all feeling it, and certainly as a state entity, we've wanted to advance state goals, and our board has said that housing affordability is one of those goals. Now, we're not going to solve the whole problem on a 600-acre site, but we want this to be a community that's welcoming to all. So all those who work on the site, from entry-level jobs to support jobs to executive positions, have opportunities to live in the area. So that kind of housing balance, creating an authentic community, is going to be important to us.
Very good. And then a final question for you, Alan. As you look at the approval process, what comes next? When do you expect the project to be approved? And what should we be watching for in the weeks and months ahead?
Well, now that we have the framework plan, we've kind of got marching orders going forward, and we're going to continue to refine that plan by doing further detailed studies on microtransit and smart city technologies and sustainability and more. And then we'll be reaching out to the development community, trying to find partners that are experienced, know how to create the kind of community we want. But really importantly, we want development partners that care about this site and this state as much as we do. So we'll be going through a rigorous process to select those partners. I think that the inmates from the correctional facility will be moved in about a year. That'll give us a chance to start demolition of the site, any remediation. We expect backbone infrastructure to go in shortly after that, and then realize this important vision for the state.
Yeah, fantastic. So grateful to have Alan Matheson again, executive director of The Point. The Point is the new development that's coming at the old prison site there in Draper. They released just hours ago a framework plan that shows everything from the bike trails to where housing and work and concert venues and so on. It's really an exciting, really once-in-a-generation opportunity for development in a really unique location here in the state of Utah. Alan, appreciate your leadership on this project, the framing of it, the way you've laid it out in terms of some core principles. Good example of the Utah model working in a really specific application. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. And I'd just say if anyone wants to see the plan, they could go to our website, thepointutah.org, and dive in to the extent they want.
All right, wonderful. The Point, utah.org. We'll put that on our social media channels today as well. And we're going to go ahead and step aside for top of the hour news. Again, from once in a generation development site in Utah to a possible one there for once in a generation infrastructure that we've just heard from President Biden. So the question is, what's next for the bipartisan bill that passed the Senate today? And what does it mean for Utah, for your own pocketbook? We'll have the answers on hour number two coming up on KSL News Radio. Stay with us.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.